The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The news never stops. Life goes on around town and around the world. You need a talk show that keeps track of it. A program with bold opinions that's always open to your views. That is this show. Welcome to the Mark Davis Show on 660 AM. The Answer.
And a good morning, everybody. Hour number two, 8 o'clock hour here on this Monday, the 24th day of January 2022. Over the weekend was the Roe v. Wade anniversary and the Texas Rally for Life. Rhonda was a part of that, and we're going to sit her down, if not this hour, then the beginning of next, and talk about what it was like to be down in Austin for, and I'll tell you what's great, is the pendulum is swinging. The pendulum's been swinging for a long time. The pro-life movement has won over so many hearts and minds, and we're about to change the law. Not because our opinions have prevailed, but because what needs to happen, what's always needed to happen, is for a constitutionalist majority on the Supreme Court. I'll believe it when I see it, you know, because John Roberts is still alive, and, you know, there's the occasional squirrely Kavanaugh moment, but Roe v. Wade may not be long for this world, which is awesome, and this was a particularly energized March for Life anniversary, Rally for Life in Austin. Rhonda was there. We'll get her report here in just a little bit. Right now, just take a pause, take a deep breath, and consider what you want America to be. That sounds like a very broad question, but here's the very specific way in which I mean it. I'm going to calls real quick, and then I'm going to season that with some background, some of the reporting from over the weekend, because I'm guessing you have gathered what is going on in Ukraine. Vladimir Putin is poised, it seems, to invade Ukraine. Russia is no longer the Soviet Union. Communism is no longer the issue, but Putin's authoritarianism and his desire to get the band back together, to unite many of the former republics of Mother Russia, has resulted in this morning's headlines being that NATO has announced that they will send fighter jets and ships to Eastern Europe. The possibility of a Russian invasion of Ukraine looms large. And so then the question also looms large. What should America do? Now, we're part of NATO, obviously. What should we do? What should the world do? But my main concern is about us, about our tax money, and about the blood of the men and women who wear the uniform of this country. We are admittedly war weary. Look at what we've been through in the last 20 years. We went from vast enthusiasm to fight terror, whatever that even ever meant. And I don't mean that disparagingly. It was hard. I mean, there was never going to be a signing ceremony on the USS Missouri where the terrorists, surrender like the Japanese did in 1945. But there's an argument, really, that since we're not getting guys' heads sawed off on YouTube every other day, and terrorism's not in the news every day except in synagogues in Colleyville, that we kind of won, that we have delegated terrorism to just kind of a residual murmur, and that we've done what we set out to do. Yeah, okay, that's one way of looking at it. I'm prepared to go with that up to a point. But what does that say for future trouble spots, current trouble spots like Ukraine? Is it a bad thing if Putin invades Ukraine? Of course it is. Is it our business? Now, the argument for why it's not is one that I think Mike is going to make in detail on his show. It's one that resonates greatly with me. But if the answer is no, and I did a little Twitter poll over the weekend, 2-1, not worth it. My choices were simple. I said that the notion of an American involvement in Ukraine is either A, justifiable support of an ally, or B, a terrible invitation to another endless war. Now, obviously, there's a lot of wiggle room between those. Our involvement could be brief. We could kick Russia out of Ukraine in a matter of a couple of weeks and be done. Unless we're not. Unless we're not. So if your answer is no, and I guess the odds are that it's that is your answer. By the way, either way, give me a shout, 866-660-5759, 866-660-5759. Does that mean that we are done? Does that mean that the whole world's policeman thing has run its course, that we're just not going to do that anymore? Because if this doesn't meet the bar, what would? What would? And by the way, I'm not saying that it does. I am conflicted in the following way. I believe right now I'm very skeptical about leaping into some military action in Ukraine. Very skeptical. And yet, the concept, how does it play out if we don't, if the world doesn't, if NATO bends and we just let Putin have Ukraine? Oh, great. How's that work out for like the rest of, I don't expect Putin to be marching troops into France, but your thoughts, please. Have we reached a tipping point in America where the majority of, not just the majority of Americans, maybe even the majority of Republicans, the majority of conservatives, because we have been the people who, for my entire life, my 64 years, we've been the people not who are war hungry or, you know, banging the drums for war at every turn, but pretty well ready to deploy America to any place around the globe where a certain set of conditions are met that it is worth our while, either because of our own stability and security, our own interests, or the interests of a stable world. Your thoughts, please, 866-660-5759. We're in Dallas. Lavina, Mark Davis, how are you? Happy Monday.
Well, how are you, Mark?
I am good.
Great Monday to you, too.
Thanks.
I just had we don't need to go to war in Ukraine to stop the Soviets.
No,
same difference.
Exactly.
We have the power financially to shut Putin down today. Cut off his pipeline. Open ours. It worked under Donald Trump. We have the power worldwide. All the Western nations, any assets that Russia might have, they can't get to him. He can't fight a war if he broke.
I think there's a T-shirt. He can't fight a war if he broke. True. It'll take a while to ruin him, to bankrupt him. But this is a strong point, I think, one's going to be made moving forward. Economic sanctions, economic sanctions, economic sanctions. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We've been economic sanctioning the Iranians, like, since the Ayatollah, Ayatollah Khomeini arose, and that's 43 years ago. And they are still a palpable threat in the Middle East. Economic sanctions are great. They don't cost American lives. They don't cost American money. They cost them money. The target of the sanctions are the ones who pay the freight for that. So the question then becomes, is there enough of a vice grip of economic sanctions that will make Putin in the short term think better of invading Ukraine? 866-660-5759. We're in the fine named town of Godly, Texas. Raymond, Mark Davis, welcome. How are you? Happy Monday.
Happy Monday too, Mark. Always appreciate how you evaluate circumstance.
Thank you.
I'm not here to comment on whether we go to Ukraine or not. What I do know is you made a comment appropriately that we could go in and help for a little bit and leave. My dilemma with that is we'll never go in, help, and leave. We're either going to not go or go. Say we're going temporarily and abstain. So I just want us to be deliberate about whatever we need to do and, you know, I'm for holding back Russia any way we can. That's my opinion, purely my opinion. But I don't think we'll go in for 2 weeks, help and leave, as you kindly said, as an option.
Yeah, I've that is there great wisdom in that, Raymond. It seems binary. It seems that, and I don't mean do nothing. Maybe the economic sanctions are great, but if the idea is a big American military commitment, the answers are either no or yes, with the knowledge that it's not going to be quick, tidy, and we're out of there by Memorial Day. Nope.
Agreed. And it's, you know, I'm not sure our current administration has the resolution and courage to tackle this at any level.
I know. Boy, thanks for adding. Because, Raymond, thank you three times now. I appreciate it. Best to everybody in Godly. I know you can't miss an opportunity to bag on Biden. Well, not when it's appropriate. I mean, projecting, it is always a better day for America when strength is projected from the White House. It is always a tougher day for America and the world when weakness and prevarication and doddering are projected from the White House. That's provocative around the world. It energizes tyrants and terrorists and tin horns. We're in a bad way, right? There's no good time for something like this to arise, but it's a bad time when you have a barely functional president and a feckless administration. It makes the time particularly worse. We're in Fort Worth. Harold, Mark Davis, welcome. Happy Monday.
Good morning. I just wanted to give you Kipling's poem. It's always a temptation to an armed and agile nation to call upon a neighbor and to say, we invaded you last night. We are quite prepared to fight unless you pay us cash to go away. We never pay anyone denigale, no matter how trifling the cost. For the end of the game is oppression and shame, and the nation that pays it is lost. With China on Taiwan, etc.
Well, I tell you what, anybody going to Kipling is going to get some serious respect points from me. Thank you very, very much. And the motivations, obviously money, national interest, a stable world, teaching a bad guy a lesson, being the world's policeman, having a nation that is a good heart, protecting an ally, all of these go into the hopper. Of sometimes competing interests. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it very, very much. Let me pause, come back. We'll take more of you. 866-660-5759. What kind of country are we? What do you want to do? What do you not want to do as we look at the possible flare-up? And I mean today. I mean, I don't mean we're necessarily going to get, tanks in Kiev. And by the way, I'm at the point now where you remember Peking? Remember Peking duck? And then they suddenly said, nope, Beijing. I've been fine with Beijing forever. When did a thoroughly decent Russian-Ukrainian sounding word like Kiev, K-I-E-V, when did that become K-Y-I-V? What is that from the Adventures of Scrabble for extra points? Kiev, whatever. Anyway, I don't think we're going to have tanks rolling down the streets there by nightfall, but who knows in the near term what might happen. And we're talking about what we want America to do or not do. 822, Mark Davis, 660 AM, The Answer.
If you want something to play with, go and find yourself a toy. Baby, my time is too expensive.
The great Aaron Neville is 81 today.
And I'm not a little boy.
So you had Tell It Like It Is, which a big hit in 66, and then the incredible work, of course, with the Neville brothers. And then 22 years after this, 1988, the greatness of Don't Know Much, his duet with Linda Ronstadt.
Don't play with my heart, it makes me furious.
866-660-5759.
But if you want me to love you,
might as well let him get to the hook. After all, it is his birthday. Ready? All together now.
Girl, you know I will. Tell it like it is.
It's worth saying twice. 866-660-5759 in Dallas. Wayne, Mark Davis, welcome. How are you, sir?
Hey, Mark. How are you?
Thanks for
taking my call.
Sure.
Listen, I'm a progressive, but common sense tells me the United States has to actually step up, send troops, beef up the border. I would even take it a step further and say, now, if it was me, I would put American troops in Ukraine.
Oh.
And then provoke Putin. Because the reason being is he's either going to come or he's not going to come.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't have a war in Europe with no one stopping Putin. He has to be stopped now.
Isn't this a fascinating moment? First of all, Wayne, among progressives, how much company do you think you have? Do you think you have a lot of company or that you might be a bit of an outlier among liberals?
I think, well, listen, I have to call it like I see it. One of the things that General MacArthur said, I think it was him, never fight a land war in Asia. We should have never went to Korea. We should have never went to the Middle East. Because it doesn't work. Europe, we can handle. We can think like them. What Bill Clinton did was he bombed the heck out of Serbia, Kosovo, and all those places. War was over with in a couple of months. Europeans do not have the stomach to fight.
Then what interesting moment do we have where I'm going to guess, I mean, it might not be 90%, but maybe it's, you know, 55, 60, of conservatives not interested in a big military incursion by America, and maybe some decided Democrats are. What is that? I don't mean to overanalyze, but how do you think we got to that point?
Well, I think this is one of the things I think about conservative is they don't play the long game. They only look at what's immediately in front of them and how they feel. I think the long game says, Putin wants to reconstitute the Soviet Union,
right,
and he's going to go after Kyiv. He went after Kazakhstan. He's going to go after Estonia and all the other countries. If you have to stop him. That's just my opinion.
Wayne, I appreciate it. Thank you very, very much. This is a fascinating sort of political bedfellows issue, and I really appreciate your view. I would suggest, as a long game conservative, that every view that I've – first of all, I look at everything at the long game. The wisdom of something, the notion of America extinguishing certain brush fires, has been because of the long-term significance of it. The notion of extinguishing communism in Southeast Asia, which didn't exactly go the way we thought it was, did it, was because of the long-term wish to prevent communism's march. The 20 years that we spent at war in the part of the world that wants to kill us in the Middle East, it wasn't just a knee-jerk 9/11 revenge thing. It was to supposedly stem jihadism around the world. I kind of think almost everybody thinks long-term. It's just different ways to get to the destination we would think we would share. We don't want Putin to be stomping all over Ukraine. I think that's fairly unanimous. I don't think there's anybody that's cavalier about that. But the notion of American blood and treasure to stop him, that's a different question. And we're asking it this morning, 866-660-5759. Mark Davis, 833. Into the newsroom we go. Here's Gordon Griffin.
You put me high upon a pedestal.
There are two ways
so high that
in which Rhonda is significant today. Well, there are dozens of ways every day. But here's one. Ann Murray's You Needed Me. She asked, could we do some Patsy Cline maybe because it's 15 years ago that my mom passed? I said, sure. Then she did a pivot, head fake, called an audible, said, no, how about Ann Murray, You Needed Me? Sure, whatever you want. 15 years, huh?
So, I can't believe it. It seems like just yesterday.
With the note, since you are here because someone chose life, the incredible significance of the March for Life, the Texas Rally for Life, and we told everybody on Friday that you were Austin bound for that. And this is a so let me just ask you, because I don't want to talk about it until we do it on the air. Was this year's Rally for Life, and you have been a part of these just as long as I've known you and forever, was there particular energy? Was it a grouping of people not only gathered as they always are to fight against the unconstitutionality of Roe v. Wade and to fight for the unborn, but was there an energy that comes from the notion that, doggone it, we might be about to do it?
It was by far the most energetic crowd that I have ever been a part of for any pro-life activity that I've ever been. And you're right. I participate in these rallies here in Dallas, been going down to the Austin one for years. Haven't got the opportunity to go to DC yet. But maybe next year I'll be going to celebrate the end. But it was just, there was so much energy in the crowd, and I was hosting the live stream and the Instagram and the YouTube. I was there at the steps as the Knights of Columbus were leading the march in, and the band began to play, and the crowd and Mark, the energy was just, it was just, I can't even put into words, and you're the wordsmith of the two of us, but my gosh, it was incredible how much energy of the crowd. It was like just so much excitement. You could almost feel that people are finally not afraid, because it's a very uncomfortable topic whenever you stand for the right to life.
Yeah, you're anti-woman, you're anti-healthcare, and the imagery coming out of it. I always take a look at what people are posting and the coverage of such things. First thing that occurred to me is how young everybody is. The number of people showing up for marches for life who are 20, are 25. This is not,
the Students for Life. They're just a powerhouse. And it's because people are tired of sitting back and being polite, and they've taken charge and they've taken over the message that being pro-life is pro-woman. And we're done. We're done with just sitting back and being polite and saying, I know this is uncomfortable, so you don't want to talk about it. And this, you're right. The younger generation is taking charge and taking lead. And they're like, you know what? Being pro-life, my generation is going to end abortion, because we are about empowering women to make a life decision.
The earliest place to support women is in the womb. Hello. And which leads me to the other massive misconception, and that is the notion of pro-choiceness being offered as a women's issue or a women's rights issue. There was Beto choosing the January 22nd Roe v. Wade anniversary to post a thing with his big logo that said, "Abortion is health care." Really? For whom? And it was just, I just said, I'm just going to leave this here. I just put that up. Just everybody just discuss. Just discuss. And so there you were with a bunch of people at the Texas Rally for Life on what may be the last one that we have to hold to undo Roe v. Wade, because we're not done. Because for those that don't know, if Roe v. Wade is overturned tomorrow, it doesn't turn into a nationwide abortion ban. It means Texas and every other state can have whatever abortion laws they wish. Texas is going to absolutely stand for life. Other states may stand for life even more ardently. Your Utah, your Alabama, I don't know. Other states will remain as ghoulish as they currently are. California, Massachusetts, etc. But then I can see pro-life activism spreading out to the Ohios, the Floridas, the Michigans, the Arizonas, sort of the purple states that are kind of figuring out which way to go, and showing them how to fight for life as well. So we ain't done by a long shot.
That's so true. But it allows, here in Texas, it's done for us, because Governor Abbott and the legislature passed the Human Life Protection Act. So the second that we do overturn Roe v. Wade and it pushes it back to the states, then here in Texas, we have, some people refer to it as the trigger ban, but it's actually called the Human Life Protection Act, where immediately, no special session needed, called, immediately abortion becomes illegal in the state of Texas. Yeah, killing your baby becomes illegal in the state of Texas.
Imagine that, this is kind of funny, pardon me, I'll look if I have to, except for life of the mother, or is the curious rape and incest thing in there too?
No.
Just life of the mother.
Yes, all life is protected.
Because that's why Brian Hughes was getting grilled every day and had to explain, which I know this takes some heavy lifting, and that is why we do it with goodwill and with patience, and to help people understand that the unborn life is either sacred or it's not. Okay, if it is, rape and incest don't change that. Okay, if it's not sacred, then rape or incest, or you don't want a fifth kid, or you're too old, or it's not convenient, or it's not an odd numbered year, but it's expendable for any reason. So That's why the rape and incest exception is moral idiocy. If you call yourself pro-life,
you do a wonderful job of bringing that up often. But in Texas, and this speaks to the power of pushing it back to the states, because we are so lucky in Texas when we meet at every legislative session that anytime something like this comes up, then we have so many people leading the pro-life movement that are down there who are survivors of being that person that was conceived out of rape. And whenever you meet them and you realize, just like you and me or Matt and Gordon, they're just so happy and thankful to be alive and that their birth mother chose life for them. No different than my birth mother chose life for me, even though that she was, you know, became pregnant under non-ideal circumstances. So each life, no matter how you, in what manner you were conceived, your life is valued, so that somebody just like my mom, that you so I appreciate that you helped me remember her today, because there's so many women like my mom, Pete, that, you know, want to have a baby to bring into their family and make their forever family.
And the so-called trigger law, the term refers that Rhonda referred to, is since our legislature meets every 2 years, which is awesome, by the way, it means that if something happens between sessions, we don't have to drum our fingers on the table and wait another 18 months, 12 months, 6 months, however far away the next session is, abortion becomes illegal. But for the mom's life exception, the moment Roe v. Wade is overturned. So, hey, let's have that happen. Thank you, Rhonda. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
I will add that if anybody would like to kind of go back and revisit that Texas rally at texasrallyforlife.org, the one that the website that you promoted last Friday for us, they can go to the texasrallyforlife.org. And if they weren't able to come down, that they can go back and view the entire program of the day and all the excitement and just get a piece of that.
The dork in me has to ask, you're doing live streams and YouTubes and stuff from the Capitol steps, and what do they have set up? What was it? I mean, how did that all work?
Well, we started on the north side of the Capitol, and then we take off, and, you know, it was very much any person that ever dreamed or watched the Macy's Day Parade. That's kind of like how I was, you know, since I'm your radio producer. Then they're like, oh, let's give it to Rhonda. So I took the mic around, and I was able to interview while we were marching Senator Donna Campbell, Sean Carney from 40 Days for Life. And then, like I said, then we make our way to the steps. I kind of skirted over so that I could see the rest of the march come in, and then finishing at the rally at the steps and kind of welcoming all of the thousands and thousands of people coming in. And seeing them come up Congress Avenue to the steps of the Capitol. And, you know, as we prepared for Governor Abbott to take stage and Representative Gio Capriglione, we had all these wonderful speakers, but just getting to kind of do that man on the street and to wear that hat for the day was really cool.
Last thing, because right there in that bubble around the Capitol, the pro-life environment, a bunch of pro-life conservatives gathering in a big lib city like Austin just makes it extra sweet. Did you spend the night? Did you just drive down, do this, and come back?
I drove down and came back.
Okay, gotcha. Yes. My point being, is Austin still troubled? Did you have to step over, you know, people and syringes to get anywhere you're trying to get, or didn't,
you know, the streets were
a little
clean.
Bit little better because
they had a marathon going on as well. Yeah. And so I don't know if they cleaned it up or if I'm just, you know, kind of desensitized to it, because every time I go down there to spend time at the Capitol, it's just become kind of a natural thing, like driving by that beautiful rest stop that we have, you know, on 35. Yeah. The tents and the people are just, it's a broken city. But we did have actually one city council person join us on the stage.
Austin City Council person?
Yes, there is one.
One conservative city council.
There is one pro-life Austin City Council. And our MC, Debbie Jolke, she actually mentioned, she was like, so we could all vote. Those of us who live here in Austin could help make that happen.
I just want the Texas Capitol to be functional. All righty, Austin Report. And again, so some of the stuff is still up there that you guys did there at Texas Rally for Life.org, texasrallyforlife.org. org. All right, 866-660-5759, 850.
Oh, I love my rosy child. You got the way to make me happy.
1970, Neil Diamond. Little Cracklin' Rosie. It's just a strange title. You want to know what is behind that? Here on Neil Diamond's birthday, 81. What a great record this is. All together now. Come on.
Play it now. Play it now. Play it now, my baby. Cracklin' Rosie, make me smile.
So the story's about how Neil Diamond was inspired to write Cracklin' Rosie. There's reportedly a name of an inexpensive sparkling wine produced by the Andres Vintners of British Columbia called Cracklin' Rosé. I am not making this up. And it was, shall we say, popular among the indigenous population. And one story suggests that Neil Diamond heard a story about a native Canadian tribe while doing an interview in Toronto. Tribe had more men than women, so the lonely men of the tribe would sit around, drink their wine together, which inspired him to write Cracklin' Rosie. That may be total nonsense, but it's the stuff of legend. Cracklin' Rosie, good grief.
Play it now, play it now, play it now, my baby.
I don't know if I'm going to consume any liquid that is preceded by the adjective cracklin'. Hey, Bill, want some of this Cracklin' orange juice?
Set the world.
I don't think so. All righty. We'll let Neil take us out, and then we took a little pro-life break there. I want to tell you what some of the different sides are saying about the notion of American involvement in Ukraine and other things from the weekend gone by. 866-660-5759. Grab a line, Mark Davis, 660 AM, The Answer.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn. Deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never before seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to salemnow.com. Salemnow.com.